Kessel was my bitterest enemy, and I think I mentioned that he would say things about me to Federation leadership. He would quote me all kinds of wild things, that I hated him, and I was no good, poor Jew, and whatever it was. To this day, we're friendly. But in any event, he was really miserable. And then, of course, he hated
Saul Abrams.
Saul Abrams. And boy, did he hate Saul Abrams. You know, he took off on Saul and his father. And so we were just talking about. So he was, and whatever he could do to run Saul down, mm-hmm. he would. In the meantime, the assistant associate director of the Federation, Saul Weisberg.
Saul Weisberg, yeah.
Who, his wife still works for the Federation, Tibby, who's their artist. Saul Weisberg kept trying mm-hmm. to make a merger mm-hmm. between the two schools. And to get... And then eventually it came to trying to get Saul to resign.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd get his board to think about it from time to time. We could never push him into resigning. And I gather that since my time, that finally did the schools merge?
Yes.
So I thought.
You know, I was going to ask you about that.
I wasn't there, I don't think, when they actually merged.
Mm-hmm. What year was it?
10 years ago. No, you never merged.
Jerry.
Yeah?
No.
It was always working out.
You're talking about merging of the School of Advanced right. Jewish Study and
right.
the Hebrew Institute.
And trying to get...
And Saul Weisberg tried.
Right, and trying to get Saul to resign. Saul Weisberg, Saul Abrams to resign. But he couldn't. He couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
is he still there
now, Abrams? No. Abrams? No, I don't think so.
No, Saul was replaced by Brauner.
Yeah, they have a new person for, I think now executive of both.
No, it's another
they
subject.
They didn't have a merger?
Let's let it go.
I don't know.
Let's
okay.
let it go.
Because that was after
you
my
can't
time.
Add anything,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, that after my time. Yeah. So that was Jewish education,
mm-hmm.
which was a constant, and they were also got a fair amount of money, although, Kessler always complained that the school got more, that the institute got more than...
And vice versa. Actually, that wasn't true, but between them, they got about $600,000.
A fair amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
It was ugly.
It was ugly. You know, you know anything more about it than that? Why was it so ugly?
Well, because they said such nasty things about each other.
Did Saul say nasty things about...
In his own quiet way.
Kessler?
Yeah. But he was not nearly as vituperative as Aaron.
As Aaron, yeah. No,
nobody could be as vituperative. I'm amazed that they put up with Aaron.
Mm-hmm. Amazed.
Yeah.
Well, you gave one answer. You said he ran a good school.
He did.
He did. Speak up.
He ran a very good school. I was there a couple of times. I attempted some of their classes.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were bright, knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. I really think there he did a service. I really think so. No,
he did a service.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because it was one of the few places in the country that had a high school.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A communal high school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After
Bar Mitzvah.
Mm-hmm. So these were the... So that part of it, mm-hmm. that part of it was a...
It was worth the Federation.
It was worth our support.
It
know,
worth
the bottom
support.
Line, and I guess that's why people put up with all the shenanigans that went on there. And somehow the leadership of Federation never wanted to get involved.
Yeah.
But I was really proud of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, Amos.
It was like it was over here somewhere.
Well, Amos Comey did.
Oh, yeah. Well, Amos became head of the School of Advanced Jewish Studies. Yes. And then Aaron was. And he was not immune to Aaron's Mishigas.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But Amos was a sweet guy, and he never died too young. Amos Comey.
Amos Comey.
Wonderful person.
I'm going to ask you more about that. Amos Comey was... and also Beck Kaplan.
Well, Beck. Beck was Jewish education way, way back. He was involved with all of them. And we tried to use Beck a lot to work this thing out, but it was just not... but we knew that while both those executives were there,
mm-hmm.
we weren't going to work anything out.
Mm-hmm.
We, myself and Saul Weisberg, no matter what combination we tried to work out, it was not just going to.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron desperately wanted to take over the Institute.
Yes.
And but then he wrote books and so forth. He was, a bright person, but he could not keep himself from columnifying, if I can use a word that I don't exist.
Doesn't exist.
The way he attacked people was absurd, and it didn't have any effect.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
And then, behind my back, to me, tell me what a great guy I am, behind my back, he'd fill up.
He vilified all.
Yeah, which is one of those things. So that's the Jewish Family and Children's Service. I mean, Jewish Family, that's the education agency. That pretty much takes care of the agency.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish Chronicle, I don't think.
I wanted to talk to you about the Jewish Chronicle. Yes, a little bit,
okay. Well, the Jewish Chronicle.
And Bloom.
There was Al Bloom, the Jewish Chronicle, and Al Zucker. Zucker at that time was business manager, and Al Bloom was the editor. They didn't have a very good relationship, I believe.
And Al Zucker?
He was a business manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to recall, there was a big reorganization of the Chronicle during our regime.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got it on a business-like basis. For years they were, they never charged for the paper. And of course there was a lot of feeling that the paper was run by the Orthodox community because Al Bloom was strongly Orthodox. We eventually worked out a situation where we put them on a paying basis by their, I think they may still get a small subsidy, but where people buy subscriptions, which didn't happen in those days. Everybody got a free subscription. And the band developed a pretty good board, pretty good leadership. Stan Levine was very good on that particular board. Was president, and still maybe. But the one thing about the Chronicle was good for us. It was a great improvement over the two independent papers they resulted from a merger of two independent papers, like the old Anglo-Jewish Press, which were independently owned, and did their thing, and they were awful papers. This particular paper, in a sense, became a Federation paper, although in a sense it was an independent agency. And they certainly used all our stuff and became our mouthpiece.
Yeah, well, I actually thought that the no-charge policy was a deliberate Federation policy, which I strongly support. I don't believe that it should be charged, precisely for that reason. there are people who need the paper. Now, I want you to talk about that. I'm surprised that to hear from you.
Oh, well, actually, there was a big, big problem.
Yeah.
Everybody felt that there was a tremendous number of people that could afford to buy the paper.
That's right.
Okay.
But
now, I don't try to recall
what better happened.
And they ended up with tremendous number of subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Tremendous number.
Yeah.
Whether or not people that couldn't afford the paper got the paper, I don't really recall whether or not there was a policy that said that if you couldn't afford the paper. I imagine there was a policy, but very few people
would say that.
And for a while, if I remember correctly, in the earlier years, they did send out some free papers, but I don't know what's happening today.
It wasn't the free papers. Any Federation donation of as much as $10 or $15 got you a paper.
Correct. Oh, that, yeah, now I recall.
Right,
okay.
You had to do it, right.
Yeah, in other words, you didn't have to buy a subscription.
That's right.
That was before.
Oh,
right.
It used to be that if you were a contributor to the Federation,
right.
That was what was before.
That's right. I thought
now,
that was
it couldn't
seem to interest you very much.
No, and I didn't think it was I'll put it to you this way. The forces that felt that putting the paper on a paying basis rather than made the paper a lot more worthwhile.
Hmm.
Now you can argue that point back and forth. The general feeling was that it ended up being a very useful paper and the theory. It's good that everybody should get hold of it, it's good for the Federation and so forth. And you know, in this town, there are very few people that don't know the Federation,
mm-hmm.
that it exists.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very few people that aren't mm-hmm. aware of the Federation. It means something to people in this town. Now, I don't know whether that's changing at all. But generally speaking, whether you're a contributor or not a contributor, you know the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
There's the question of about the educational value, which is what people would say. I mean, you're making the paper available to everybody, regardless, a throwaway type of paper, let's say, for example. That philosophy, in practice, it really not necessarily doesn't work out. For example, during the biggest war, the Yom Kippur War, we decided, well, you know, this is a time when we should have mass meetings to raise money. Mass meetings, we could always have a mass meeting without raising money, but a mass meeting to raise money after all, this is an opportunity for everybody to contribute. Who can be against it? So I remember we had a mass meeting some big hall, we had maybe 1,000 people. The majority of the people walked out of there without being a gift.
Without? But you said before that, the worst thing, people would walk into the office.
People with money. People with money.
I'm surprised.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Valerie.
Okay, repeat.
What I was saying is that we had this mass meeting to raise money, and a lot of people came, but nobody gave. And remember, I told you that most of the money comes from a small number of people. And that's probably true to this very day. Even though Jews are generally good contributors compared to, let's say, other religious groups. But still, if you look at our, really look at it, there are enormous number of people that make very small contributions. Now, some of them can't afford more, but a lot of them can. Of course, I was saying that as a fundraiser, that's my field. But in any event, the Chronicle was costing us an awful lot of money as a throwaway. and we didn't think it was doing the job. Whatever had happened, but they operated pretty well. I thought there were not too many conflicts with the Chronicle, which was good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very good that even though Bloom was highly orthodox and certainly did favor it, Zecker, on the other hand, was a strong, reform-minded person from Monroeville. He had a variety. Zecker's had three kids that became women, I think daughters that became rabbis. Very interesting. So they operated pretty well. And we had very few, once they were on an even keel, we had very few problems with the Jewish Chronicle. I think that covers all the agencies that were affiliated with us. Oh, we have national agencies and the UJA relationships, but I don't know if that's...
is there anything you can...
Well, the UJA, a national organization that was, in a sense, a national service organization for raising money for overseas.
Yeah.
And so they were always pushing us to raise more money, give us some help. But I say we ran a pretty independent shop. And pretty well did our thing, and we did it well, and I'm sure they do to this very day.
How about joint?
The JDC.
Yeah.
Oh, now on the Joint Distribution Committee, for example, which was part of the UJA, as you know, also independent. Now, remember I said that very few of our people became national leaders, but that in the JDC, Don Robinson became president, national chairman of JDC, and he's still very involved with it today. And that again was, that was an old organization, used to be German Jewish, headed by the Warburgs. A good organization, did good work, of course, in Europe after the Holocaust, and good work currently in Israel. And so he became national chairman of the Joint Distribution Committee. I think he had it for about 3 years. And then, of course, there were the defense agencies.
I wanted to ask you about Friedberg and JCRC. Was that before your time?
Friedberg.
Oh, you would be before your time.
What years were you in?
I think it was 65 to 78. Something like that. Oh, then, of course, I did, when I retired, I did a little work for the Endowment Committee, but then I became an independent consultant. And I worked for the Council of Jewish Federations, which was our national service organization for federation. And I developed a study process to examine federations, how federations work. And I eventually
became consultant for
the Council of Jewish Federation. And I did about 8 cities, including Philadelphia, Miami, you don't need another name for it, Buffalo.
For Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, Miami.
Miami.
Dallas.
Miami, Dallas. What else?
Buffalo.
Dallas, Buffalo.
Fort Lauderdale.
South Broward. Wait a minute, Fort
South
Lauderdale.
Broward.
Yeah.
That's Pensacola.
No, South Broward is below Fort Lauderdale.
Oh.
It's an area. I forget where else. About 8 of them.
Uh-huh.
And it was a lot.
What was the general...
communities would come to the Council of Federation and say, look, we're doing a lousy job. Staff doesn't seem to be doing well. We don't raise enough money. We do a bad budgeting job. Anything that involved federation. And this study, which I developed, process involved a long questionnaire and then an analysis by me and a half a dozen trips to these communities. And that's how I learned to make money, because Federation paid me adequately, but when I left, I think early in the gun, I said that my wife became my agent. Whenever I would go to, and what would happen would be the council would recommend me, and I would go, refer me, and I'd go to the community and meet with their leadership, and then they'd ask me how much I want to do the study.
Mm-hmm.
And with my wife's help, I gradually was able to get myself to, without choking, up to $25,000 a study.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was unheard of. Unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
But I discovered that these people were perfectly willing to pay. They were business people.
Mm-hmm.
There were some unfortunate byproducts of it because a couple, two or three times as a result of the study, people lost jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Not my fault necessarily, but that's just the way the study came out.
You mean agency people?
Yeah, the Federation executives.
Yeah.
Then I did some consulting for the United Way one year here, but it was an experience for me.
Tell me about that, United Way.
Well, the United Way was also in very, very tough shape, and I guess I was referred by Lester Hamburg, a well-known person down since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost their campaign director and so forth. I worked for them for about one campaign, and it was, I saw the way they raised money.
Mm-hmm.
Discovered they really didn't want to raise a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Their philosophy probably to this day, the philosophy was you get the unions to check off, big unions in this town. Bye, sweetheart. Okay. We get the unions to check off, and we got a few big contributions from corporations, and that was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
They never went to the businessman, the small businessman, anybody, individual attorneys, anything like that.
Isn't that the one that where the corporations tell the employees that they must?
Well, there's a
they
tell their executives, particularly, especially the executives, they suggest to the executives what they should do, and they all do it. And the unions, on the other hand, it was negotiated. It was a day's pay or whatever that was worth, but that wasn't done by the corporation itself. They couldn't control the union, but through the union checkoff system. The union checkoff system would give them about 50% of the money. The corporation should have been providing a lot more of the money. They didn't, and I never remember. I'll never forget it. I was working with special gifts that year for the United Way. And I was looking up the contributions of some of the CEOs. I couldn't find them. I found the corporation gift. And then by double-checking and checking, I would discover that the CEO himself would get $300. Maybe he was making $800,000. And would slip the money in with the corporation gift. So that astounded me. So I never forget. I went to a meeting one day at the Duquesne Club. I brought with me the gifts of all these guys, giving $300, $400, $500. It was like a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but it was like a revolution.
Well, because these people were so, some of the guys were very upset when they saw how little some of the guys were giving. And those guys that were there that were not giving very much were very embarrassed.
Mm-hmm. Well, did any of them say only a Jew would pull this on you?
No, they probably thought that. They never said it. Who knows? But, and it was not a great experience for Kalai, because I couldn't affect what they were doing very much. I tried, but they're a pretty tough organization. Now, they ran into trouble nationally, as you know.
Yeah.
And this guy that was running it here also lost his job. I don't think it was my fault. I don't think it was my fault. I just
think
it was a bad job. Mm-hmm. So that, in a sense, is the story of Pittsburgh and Jerry Soroka, unless you have some other questions.
Did you, I'd like to ask about some individual lay people. You've already mentioned Comey, you've already mentioned Robinson, you've mentioned...
I talked about Will Gow.
Anyone else? You other people?
Don Robinson. Oh, then of course there were the twins.
Who?
These are the twins were part of the family of the Johnstown operation.
Glosser?
Yeah, the Glosser twins. They married Jesse Cohen and Lenny Rudolph. And in the process, Jesse and Lenny became very close. Jesse Cohen owned home furniture for a while and also was involved with the Glosser brothers.
Rudolph owns
the Wendy's in this area, plus a lot of other stuff, 5000 Fifth Avenue.
His son became
One of the sons.
And he married
one of the two sons.
Glosser, I think.
One of them married Fisher's daughter, who was the oncologist in town. And the other one married Al Rogal's partner's daughter. The one that became a Hasidic Jew. Married Aunt Fidel's daughter. Now, and Jesse Cohen became president of the Federation, and then Rudolph became president of the Federation. Now, Rogal was president of the Federation. Herman Feinberg was president before I got there, but was always very close. Don Robinson was president of the Federation. Amos Comey was not president of the Federation, or could have been. And those were the... And then we talked about Beck Kaplan and Leon Falk.
What about him? You never said a word about
him. Well, I talked about Leon Falk. He was the guy that if you remember, I met with him and he said, look, I'm against all-day school. But he was never a force in the community. His lawyer, Kaplan, I don't remember his first name, was a force. Would come to meetings, and I remember on his 75th birthday, he had a big party for everybody. On his 80th birthday, he had a big party for everybody. On his 85th birthday, he had a big party for everybody. Quite a guy. Brilliant attorney. Those were the people, and then the other people, there was the Rakoff family.
Yeah, what about
Ray Rakoff? People were all very close, never got to be president or campaign chairman. Not that they couldn't have been, but just didn't want to. Art Fidel was very active, was also a campaign chairman.
Did you know Harold Ruttenberg?
Harold was never a factor. Very close to Israel and so forth. Never a large contributor and never a factor. Never a factor. In terms of the deliberations of the Federation. Our brother was Leon Netzer. You keep thinking he became president of the Federation. There was Max Bluestone. They were partners in the metal business. Very sweet guy, very active in the Federation. These were the stalwarts. Harold Gondelman, he was a little bit like the Howard Metzenbaum in the Senate. A little bit of the rebel, but always within the framework. Very brilliant criminal attorney. These were the people with whom I was during those years, and who were the strength of the Federation. And who were always there. There were Lester Hamburg. He came out very, very strong person, very opinionated. But also worked within the framework of the Federation. Well, he was one of those involved in bringing the hospital closer to University of Pittsburgh. And he also was very close to Carnegie Mellon. And then Joe Katz.
Yeah. What about him?
For Joe, we always thought he was Joe.
We already know. No matter what he did, he never gave enough, according to us. Whether it was 50,000, it was 100,000, it was 150,000, it was 200,000. No matter what he did, he was never inside the Federation, but he was, in a sense, close to us.
He gave it for the school.
Well, a couple million dollars for the business school. You see his name all over.
Right.
Very, very, a guy that liked to be adored by everybody. But in a sense, he would let you come and see him, and you'd scream at him, you know, how much he was giving, and when you're going to do it, and, oh, I'm going to win. But he would always come up with a big gift, but it was never enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, according to in Courtney Darlites.
Yeah, and then there was Eddie Lewis. There's Eddie Lewis, who owns, he owned the South Hills Mall, which he sold. And then he owns the Monroeville Mall.
Mm-hmm.
Also a very wonderful guy, very friendly with Jesse Cohen and Rudolph. Pretty good giver, young guy, wild guy, but nice guy, really nice guy. Always let me play in his tennis courts. And then there was people like the Thrift Drug Group, which sold out, J.C. Penney.
Who were they?
Kenny Elias' mother.
You have to speak up.